Love this podcast? Consider supporting this show. You decide how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Visit the link in the episode description to support now.
Welcome to the Mixtape Lounge. Please welcome your host, Greg Howard Jr.
My very first guest on the very first episode of this new show is a poet, a journalist, a mother. She is my rock. She is the queen of the multiverse, and she is all that and a bag of chips. Get your candy money together. Hide your man. Yes. Hide the good silver. Please welcome to the Mixtape Lounge the one and only Jennifer Bush Harris. Hello, ma'am.
Good morning, beloved. Good morning, dearest. Not hide the candy money, Greg. Not hide the candy. I mean, if you know, you know.
Right.
If you know, you know.
So I know, but the people listening may not be aware. You, ma'am, have got a very busy summer ahead of you. What is on the agenda?
Mayhem and foolishness most days, but this summer is, well, the first 3 months of this year has been crazy, but for the next 3 months, always to accompany the Dark Lord Greg Howard Jr. and whatever missions and nefarious plans he has, so we can continue to conquer the universe, because that's always in forefront of my mind. But my first anthology of poetry, Learning to Breathe Fire, is out on Amazon on Mother's Day, of all things. The sixth cycle of the traditional women storytelling project, aka Book Six, Tell You No Lies, will be out in June of 2024. My Patreon starts up again around my birthday, which is also in June. Always send candy money to Cash App. JBH Rice. I mean, I'm an artist who's a mom. You know, it's sending the candy money always helps, and also my first book of short stories based off the traditional women's storytelling project drops in May also. So my May, June, July is packed with unleashing the imaginary people in my head, and also because Greg and his infinite wonderfulness believes in me, I'm going to be doing Black Like That as the mini zine, the little cousin, as it were, to Your Life, the Mixtape magazine. So when I tell you a chick is busy.
Booked and busy. Would expect nothing less. So talk me through the process of deciding that you were going to put out this. And having read it, it is quite epic. This anthology of all your work.
And the crazy thing is, it's not even all my work. It's just for the 30 days of Jay I've done for since 2019 to last year. What provoked me, what really pushed me to do this is actually, when I was finishing my undergrad at University of Missouri, St. Louis, I was doing this, I forget what the name of the class is now, and I'm kind of embarrassed because one of my mentors taught that, whom is Dr. Drusilla Wall, who I believe is still teaching at UMSL. And yes, her real first name is Drusilla.
We have no choice but to stand.
Of course she would teach English. That's like having Madonna as a real first name. What could you really do, right? Other than be a nun or be famous. And I actually have for one of our required readings, we had to get the completed works of Lucille Clifton. And Lucille Clifton's book is maybe like 500 pages. And the current anthology for her, the foreword is done by Toni Morrison. So what provoked me to do it is kind of like, let me see what's back here. You know what I'm saying? Let me see what's back here. Because I really started making writing, quote unquote, a career in 2013. And you and I know, being of a certain elder millennial age, where we just kind of got into, like, we've always been like the outlier weird kids. So when I got into blogging and making these platforms, I started for I Breathe Fire, which all the children should follow. I started doing this, like, these little challenges to kind of put content out so people can know who I am. So when I found out that April was, you know, National Poetry Month, I'm like, okay, I could do like 30 days a day. Okay. So every day for 30 days, I would write a poem. So in 2019, I kind of started doing that and just did couplets, which are two line poems. And then every year after that, I've tried to do a poem. And then, for, you know, the entire month of April. Not an easy feat, but it can be done. So the emphasis behind this is, let me just see what's back here. What do I have back here? And when I began to compile it, I was like, I literally said, oh, I forgot I wrote that. I forgot I wrote that. Oh man, that's good. I forgot I wrote that. So when I compiled it, I just believe at this point, with me being, quote unquote, a writer officially for a decade, I felt it was time to do something a little bigger to kind of celebrate that, to kind of put a, not a necessarily period, but to start a new paragraph for the next portion of what I'm going to be doing. So that was the chief emphasis behind that. And as I began to compile, I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot I wrote this. I forgot I wrote this. I forgot I wrote this. And it was a great way for me to kind of honor the process, as well as put it like, yeah, chick, you did that. And also to remind myself, there's still more to go, because, you know, tooting my own horn, the first anthology, which I'm sure there will be more, is like 200 and something pages, like 240 pages. And that's before, my girlfriends, Chanel Hardy and Tiffany Richardson, I actually asked them to write the intro and the outro for it, because I collaborate with them most often. When I told them I was going to do an anthology, they were like, yes, yes, let's do it. And I'm like, yes, because I'm scared out of my mind. I don't know. I don't know. But they are completely supportive of that. And also, I forgot to mention another reason why my summer is going to be booked and busy is for the last, 2 months on TikTok, I've been hosting these Necromancy of Black Women talks, which is based on the essay of the same name, which is on Amazon and Kindle now. And we go into, I guess you'd call it phase two for this essay talk. And there's going to be a second edition essay to the first essay that I wrote in October and published, I want to say, in like March of this year. So yes, I heard believing in myself, Greg, believing in myself.
So I want to talk to you about, and this is kind of a problem that a lot of creatives run into, but you know, you're a writer, but you also do podcasts and you put out content across all social media. How, as a creative and a mom and, you know, an influencer and a writer, and how do you get that work-life balance?
I had to come to, and actually did a podcast on the writer's block about this, and just the recent one. I had to come to the uneasy realization that I might die without saying everything I want to say. And I'm not saying it to be grim. I'm not saying that to, you know, put a moratorium on anything that I'm trying to do. I understand that all this power, right, all this energy, I may not be able to get everything out. And I think that's that's the chief frustration of a lot of creatives, that we want to say everything, get everything, make everything, push everything, influence everything. And you only have so many years to do that. Now, God willing, if you keep your mind, your hands, and all faculties, you know, are running on all cylinders as long as they possibly can, that's amazing. And, you know, now Nikki Giovanni is 80. You know, when I found that out, I almost started crying, because I understand now that she only has literally so many odd more years left on the planet. But what helps me in this work-life balance is, or creative life balance is, I have to understand that I have to fight for it daily. That there's no set time. I wish there were for me to, okay, you know, I'm going to get up and I'm going to write. You know, I'm not graced with that Toni Morrison stamina. Every day at 4 a.m. I'm going to get up and write for 2 hours. No, I don't. Because I'm normally, I have not accustomed myself to that. But what I have done is plug in time where I tell myself, if you can scroll, you can write. If you can scroll and watch these those silly videos, you can map, you know, your creative Q3. You can get your planning together. You can do that, and also make time. And also, you know, I also recognize that I'm the mother also of creatives. So they get that when mom's door is closed, oh, mom's writing, we can't bother her right now. That doesn't mean that they don't. But I'm aware that of three things. One, I understand that I may not live to see everything I want to write or be able to write it. Two, that this creative work-life balance, you fight for it daily. It may look different every single day. And the third is understanding that this creative energy is mine to steward. So again, if I can put, you know, so many odd hours into watching someone else's content, I can put that into myself, you know, because I'm infamous for my notes app is basically a jump drive for my brain. Sometimes I'll turn on, you know, my voice recorder and like, okay, idea. So that way it's time date stamped. So when I go through it, okay, cool. Like again, when I could be scrolling or whatever else, or lag time at the day job. Okay, you know, I wrote something down last night. Let's see what that is. And so that way I actually have a record of that. So I cannot emphasize enough that in this digital day and age that you as a creative need to have at least two places to dump your head. You need two places to dump your head. I'm not saying that you need to have an Apple device or Android is better. I'm saying that you need to use all resources at the ready. Because Greg and I grew up in a time where you didn't have that off top. And I think that's the millennium creative superpower, because we're not so dependent on a device, because we still know how to get it out the mud, as it were, and get a notebook, get a post-it, put it on a mirror. We know how to use those things in addition to this other media.
Writing but, shit on the inside of your arm.
I mean, I am infamous for, like, I have like loose leaf paper, like, you know, notebooks that, you know, I also have, and my ex-husband was like, because again, he wasn't a creative, so he didn't get it, but I think you will. I actually had a planner for like my personal life, like for kids, doctor appointments, things like that. I had my personal planner and I had a professional one. So like podcasting, themes, brainstorming. So I knew if I picked the pro planner up, everything was there. And I could go back over it. I could put passwords there. So what has helped me to try and develop a pro professional and or creative work-life balance is using all my resources. And also, if you blog, the scheduling feature for a blog is amazing, because I've knocked out like two months worth of content and just like, okay, and just let it run, because I don't know what'll happen in 2 months, but I know that these posts are done. But I know that these posts are done. I know that for this idea that, or and also what also helps me is the creative network that I have. That there are people who keep me accountable, and there'll be people like, oh, you know, sis, you gave me this. What's going on with this? So you have to have those kind of soft reminders, because sometimes life will overtake and then you'll get discouraged. Oh, I'm just so behind. I'm not going to do it. So you have to have people that are willing to help you to not just, you know, hype you up, but also to say, you know what, you gave me these pages months ago and you said that you wanted to do this. So what's going on? Cause you know, Greg is good for that. Be like, you said, and I'm just asking.
Since you brought it up, being of a certain age as we are, mm-hmm. what is your take on this kind of resurgence of all things 90s, the return of the cassette tape, and you know, Hypercolor is back?
I am amazed, because we come from an era that sat, and again, just speaking for me, after we cleaned up on Saturday, my mom didn't care what we did. She didn't care what we did, as long as the bathroom was clean, the kitchen was clean. She didn't care what we did. Just get out from under me, you know? So I remember let's just jump in the way back machine. So 33 years ago, when I was 10, I remember having, and this was 1991, I remember I had the Panasonic radio with the tape deck in it. And I remember the coolest thing that I would do is I would get blank tapes, which were 99 cents for one, or you would get the pack for like $3 or $4. The Maxwell ones that were 90 minutes. Yep. You couldn't get the cheap one, because the cheap one, it would sound horrible. And I remember I would listen to the radio and make mixtapes. And I remember thinking, man, how cool would it be when we don't have to do that no more? And we come from an era where we actually had to like, did you hear so-and-so on the radio? Yeah. Who sings that? I don't know. We got to. So you had to incorporate a level of literacy in that. Like who was on the radio? What DJ was playing? What DJ did this hour? It was a collaborative effort. It was a collaborative effort to be a music fan 33 years ago. So the fact that you have kids now, or even younger people now, which is weird to say. So, you know, younger people now who are like, look, I want that nostalgia feeling of, let me get the cassette and, you know, pause and, you know, record and play and record. So to, again, me being, you know, Miss Pearl in the Window from 227, I'm thinking, why do y'all want to do that? Why, when it's easy, I guess because it's easier now to go ahead and you could literally, if whatever music streaming platform you have, you can make a playlist from anywhere, within the matter of minutes. Do y'all know how long it took us to make a good mix, mixtape?
That was at least a weekend. At least a weekend.
At least, if you really want to make good, it would take you 2 weekends, because you had to listen. You had to watch Friday night videos.
Yep.
That was on either NBC or VH1, and not everybody had VH1. And if I had VH1, so you had to listen to the radio. And I remember in St. Louis, Friday night videos came on at like 11 o'clock, or you had to watch Arsenio to see who was hot and out there, so you could know who to listen for on the radio. But now, you know, the children can make mixtapes from anywhere. And so I think that it's a level of, let me see what this was about, because again, being engaged in that process, and also to kind of see what it was like. But I think a lot of this, as I like to term it, this current nostalgia, I think a lot of that comes from people are fascinated with what they are unfamiliar with. And just like we say all the time, that again, being a music fan so many odd years ago, you had to know which magazines to read, who was writing for said magazines, again, the radio stations that were local to your area. And again, now with streaming and satellite radio, that level of intimacy has been removed because you can literally listen to anything from anywhere now. So I think this, you know, obsession with cult with current nostalgia comes from people love, you know, what they consider to be vintage, and it's kind of hipstery, a little hipstery. And at the same time, I'm, you know, I'm being Miss Pearl in the window, like, why do y'all want to? I mean, it's easier now. You don't have to buy the blank tapes and the red. You don't have to do this. So why would you want to do that? It was and plus it was time consuming. And right. then if you let the tape run too long because you had to go do something else, because Saturday, right? And you didn't stop it, then you got all these commercials and all the everybody else's show, and then you have to go back and record back to the stopping where you messed up at, re-record it again, and hope the tape did. It was a whole process.
So do you think with this current nostalgia trend that we're seeing, mm-hmm. are we going to see the rebirth of the record store?
I think so. I think that's only a matter of time. I think that the rebirth of the record store is coming, right? Because now people are getting, quote unquote, back into vinyl. And with, for Nas's last album, he released vinyl also, a CD and a cassette tape. And I want to say the Wu-Tang Clan, for their anniversary, they did the same thing. So there, I believe it is going to be a resurgence, but I don't think it's going to be like we desire it to be. I don't think it's going to be like the brick and mortar store, but that would be cool. I really do. Cause I remember the coolest thing. Cause for Street Side Records here, when somebody's album would drop, you would have the ability to go to the little kiosk, put the headphones on, you know, new releases, pick whoever it was, and listen to like at least one song or snippets of songs to see if you wanted to buy it. So I think that it's completely possible, but I don't think we're not quite there yet because Big Daddy Bezos wants everybody's money.
That's fair.
He wants everybody's money. So I think that we're going to see it, but not quite, because I think there has to be another shift in music to do that. I think that we'll get the rebirth of the record store once music magazines start becoming, quote unquote, a thing again. I think those things are going to go hand in hand. Cause I remember the record stores or music stores here, they would have the current copy of whatever, right? From the source, they would have Word Up. They would have, any and everything there, along with selling t-shirts, along with having, you know, along with having concert information. So I think until we get that other shift toward, you know, that level of intimacy with artists, we're not gonna see that. But and again, as long as Big Daddy Bezos wants everybody's money, nah, you know, because you know, for the price of creativity is, was it $15.69 for Amazon Prime?
Yep.
I was like, I need this Bessie Smith record. I need it. I gotta go. And again, just like that, you have people who are now finding older artists. And now, you know, with the juggernaut that is Cowboy Carter, we see that, you know, the brilliance of Beyonce again with her dropping gems of you know, Black history and music throughout the entire album. So I think that there will be a resurgence, and I think we are seeing it, but until we get that other piece, we won't see an actual store. I would love for that to become a thing again. But now we're at this age of streaming. But at the same time, streaming gives it. I think streaming is taking us forward and back at the same time, because yes, everything is here. Yes, you can access everything, but not everything is available. Because there are people who are just now, right, learning who Bessie Smith is, learning who Lucille Bolden is, you know, learning who Ma Rainey is. Those women's music is not anywhere you can stream it. So you have to kind of go, you have to kind of go back to find them. And then you can only find those in certain presses in certain places. So I think that streaming is pushing us forward and also taking us back. So there always is going to be a need for that.
So we also kind of came up in the time when, and at the time he was called Puff Daddy, brought sampling to the forefront and, you know, into the limelight. And now with this like kind of current nostalgia thing, we're seeing a lot of sampling again. What are your thoughts on that?
Bring back real producers. For real, bring back real producers. This is just my opinion. I think all music is sampling because there's only so many chords and so many notes. There's and just in countless ways that you interpret them. And there was a guy I was crazy about who actually played trumpet. And I told him, I said, for those of us in the arts, I look at the world and record it with words. Y'all look at it and make music. That's something I cannot do. That you, what is it? And Duke Ellington said this, that he could take, for all that he was facing, racism and everything else, and erasure, because I'm going to say this again, the greatest American composer is not Irving Berlin, it's actually Duke Ellington. Just, yeah, I'm going to stand on that.
Say that one more time for the kids in the back.
If we see, here I go being, because I'm always a music nerd when I'm ever on Greg's program. So for the children who don't know, right, during the turn of the 20th century, you had Tin Pan Alley. You had composers and songwriters like Irving Berlin, like Rodgers and Hammerstein, who made incredible work, right? We also know that in that same time, around the same time period where jazz was first called jungle music, and we wouldn't have any particular permutation of what we know as popular music now without ragtime, which was inspired by Scott Joplin. So the greatest American composer, I believe, is Duke Ellington. If you've ever heard anything, again, here we go with streaming. If you have ever heard anything by Duke Ellington, you will understand why. And Irving Berlin was one of the most prolific songwriters in Tin Pan Alley. I believe he was a Jewish immigrant, but he was incredibly amazing. And I think that, in again, quote unquote, bring back real producers, that we have to bring back people who actually know music, which is why I think that I like Pharrell so much, because Pharrell is a real producer. Timbaland is a real producer. It's okay to sample. That's fine. You know, everybody gets inspired off something. That's fine. You know, when somebody told me that, you know, was it 50 Shades was a Twilight fanfic? I'm like, what?
Yeah. That's how it started.
Like, you know, like, oh my, like, for, oh, okay. But once I was like, oh, that makes complete sense. E.L. James, you naughty girl, you. And at the same time, bring back real producers, because not everything, some things I think don't need to be sampled. They need to be created. You know, I remember I watched the Netflix documentary about Quincy Jones. And he said, you know, there's so much arranging that you can do. And then he said, you compose or arrange 80% of it. He says 80% of it. And then he said the last 20%, you let the Lord walk in the room. So there has to be a level of respect for the craft, because not everything needs to be sampled. Not everything is a beat. Sometimes you need to know what time is, right? How many beats in a measure? You know, some of these things you're gonna have to do. And which again, as I'm always say, this is why music programs are important. This is just why they are important, because there are certain aspects of music theory that these producers need to go forward. And I'm gonna say this, as crazy as Donda's son is, he was a gifted producer. He is. I wish he would do whatever. Look, whatever simulation that Kanye is in, I can't go anymore. I can't go anymore. Whatever simulation he is in, whatever portion of the Sims we are in, I refuse to go any further with him on his game. I can't do anymore. I'm over here building my little houses. I'm over, you know, my little Sims people are chilling with the land grabs and the god. You know, we doing this. My game can't go over there, because if I go over there,
I don't have that expansion pack. Like I can't be
and
there.
I don't want to buy that expansion pack, because I don't. No, you're not going to tear my game up with this. No, you're not. We're not doing that. We're not going over there with that.
So but, do you think that interpolation is the new sampling?
I do. I do. And I also think that interpolation is, I actually think it's brilliant, because it forces you as a listener to be like, okay, that sounds like, but what is it? It's a sample, but not quite. So again, here we go. Right, here we go again. Right. Where did that come from, and who originally did it? So, and again, bring back real producers. So I think interpolation is what we're going to see more often, but I think it's going to get tricky because of how streaming is, how publishing rights are, how people are about their intellectual property. So you're going to have to do, it's going to have to be done consistently in a way that is going to honor the original artist, as well as give voice, as it were, to the person who is actually using it. So I think that bring back real producers, teach these kids music. I really wish that, again, whatever level or expansion pack that Donda's son is on, I really wish he would have taught people how to produce. I really wish he would have done that. I do, because I think one of the trap doors, right, of music is there are too many people dying with their art. There are too many people who won't tell you enough on how to, you know, this is how I did it. Study this, but also do your part. You know, as problematic as Quincy Jones is or is not, he did that. You know, and you know, my mom and Stevie Wonder are about the same age. And you know, we all know it's been 8 years since Prince has died. And it's very, very weird to say Prince is dead. Cause I can, and you know, but his thing was, collaborations. What can I bring in? How can I push this? You know, we are of the age where Michael Jackson and Prince were making albums at the exact same time. So, you know, and you can, and even now looking back, you can see how they pushed each other. Mm-hmm. Like Michael would do this, Prince would double it. Prince would do this, Michael would do this, Prince would do that. So you can see the effect of that. But those are men who worked at their craft. So I think there's a level of music that, yeah, sampling is cool. That's great. Let's get these quick beats. But I go back to what Beyonce said in her first documentary with MTV, where she said there are few artists anymore that people have put a single together. They'll run it until it burns out, do another, and they run it till it burns out. So, which is why I think that especially what she's done now with Cowboy, again, with Cowboy Carter, that every track leads into another track. It's an entire body of work. Yeah, you can take stuff off and like, yeah, I like this. Yeah, I like this. Yeah, I like this. And you know, run it on radio. But if you actually let the entire album play, it's an entire body of work. She created an album.
I like that you brought that up, because with Act One, you know, there was a lot of talk about the transitions between songs and how epic they were, but we're not talking about that with Cowboy Carter. And those transitions are just as epic as they were. Like, it's you can listen to it all the way through and there's no break in the songs.
Right. There's not, they, I don't want to say bleed, but they flow together from American Requiem to Amen. They all flow together, which lets me know that sneaky woman from Houston, that chicken. If can you imagine if Beyonce really was like, you know, I ain't gonna sing no more, I'm gonna produce that.
Yeah. And you know, this for some people, this is a conspiracy theory, but Jen and I have tested this, and yes, it is a fact that
yes,
the end tone on Amen leads you directly into I'm That Girl.
It does.
So, you know, this is, like you said, this is a body of work that, you know, will, the Beyonce multiverse will, you know, it will run from Cowboy Carter to, you know, whatever the Act 3 rock album turns out to look like.
I need to be in the house with you when this drops, because I'm not going to be able to function. Because I just feel that I'm gonna need assistance. I can't go to work the next day, because I just feel that. Because then we're gonna listen to this, gonna listen to everything. We're gonna cry. I can't be alone with that. Craig, I can't be alone with that.
I mean, you know, we were quite hyped for Act 1. Act 2, we barely fucking survived.
Barely. If the conspiracy hold up, possibly the end tone for Amen will be whatever it is track 1 is off Act 3. In preparation, I've already made my own playlist on Apple Music, but I put Cowboy Carter as the first album complete, then did Renaissance. So I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready. So when it drops, I just let it roll. And then I'll cry. And then I'll call Greg. What happens is Greg will call me. Big, did you listen? And then we'll be up for, you know, asinine hours in the morning, and then I'll have to go to work. But see, I'm not gonna be tricked this time. I'm gonna take off work. I'm not gonna be tricked this time.
There is also a theory, and this is one that the incomparable Keke Palmer put out into the world, that it's not three acts, it's four, and that the fourth act is a Destiny's Child album.
I could get behind that.
Yeah.
I can completely get behind that. I can. So all we can do is watch. But if that chick really okay, I'm gonna step back from music, right? I'm just gonna produce. Child.
Well, I mean, and she could. Because she, you know, after this Renaissance era, she could tour on these three or four albums for the rest of her life and just produce and never put out another song.
She would tear a hole in time, Greg.
Yes, she really would.
I mean, I'm here for it.
Yes. Now, this would not be a mixtape show if I did not ask you some questions. We did not put together our own little mixtape.
Nice.
So tell me, what is the song that no matter the vibe that you're going for, no matter what you're making it for, this song always goes on a playlist?
You'll make fun of me. Sympathy for the Devil by the Rolling Stones, but the cover by Guns N' Roses, because Slash's guitar.
Nice.
Slash's guitar. Slash, I don't know how people didn't know Slash was black.
But I was actually about to make that point that
like I don't like whatever genetics that his mother has, because that guitar, that always.
And for the people who may not know, Slash is like fine.
Still.
Yeah.
Still. Mm-hmm. He probably got a woman in his bed right now.
Absolutely. If not multiple.
I mean,
I 100% would.
I mean.
So what is your favorite song right now?
Levi Jeans off the Cowboy Carter album.
Excellent. That song is going to fuck up the pop charts this summer.
Man.
What's the best breakup song?
I have to put it by eras. Here I go sound like a little old lady. But the best breakup song is Solitude by Billie Holiday.
Ooh, nice. Excellent choice. I'll allow it.
Thank you.
What is the ultimate party anthem?
On to the Next One by Jay-Z.
Yes. Now, this one has a modifier. You cannot pick anything by Whitney Houston for this next song, for this next question. What is the best song from a film soundtrack?
You dirty mother. I'm literally going through the discography in my brain right now. I have good, but I don't have a best. This feels trash. this feels trash because I'm going through movie soundtracks in my head now. It comes down to these two, but I'm gonna have to say "Take My Breath Away" by Berlin from the Top Gun album.
Excellent choice. I like that.
Thank you.
So if we hadn't included the Whitney Houston modifier, what would your answer have been?
I'll always love you. There is no other answer. I do want to say, I wish that Lady Gaga would cover "Take My Breath Away." I do want to throw that out. I believe that if Stephanie were really allowed to sing that, yes.
Oh, absolutely. Because, yes. You know, when she did at the Oscars several years ago, she did a medley from The Sound of Music.
Oh, yeah.
And she was giving vocals down.
Stephanie can sing now. She can sing. Yes, she can sing.
Say what you want about her. Like, you don't have to be a fan, but I mean, she is a singer.
She is. And I love that we've gone from avant-garde Gaga to this softer guy. I love both. And I love that she's in this era of, I've done that and here I am now. That's wonderful. I was doing the wigs, the meat dress. I did all of that. That was me, darling. That was me. And also I'm doing this. Like I love House Labs Gaga and also love Poker Face Gaga. I love that. And because I know she could, I just know she could do it. If she were to do a rendition of "Take My Breath Away," that would be a wedding song. I think, of course it is, but I'm just like,
yeah.
Yes.
I would really, and this is something I've just thought of, I would really like to see her in the lead role in Evita, like on Broadway. Because, I mean, she can act.
She can.
So.
Someone get on that.
Yeah. If any of Gaga's people are listening, like.
Do that. Right. Do that. That'd be great.
Like get her on Broadway.
Yesterday.
Yeah. So tell the folks listening at home and all over the world where they can find you on the worldwide webs.
Oh my. I am always haunting the TikTok for right now.
For the next 90 days.
Is it 9 months or 90 days that they're saying that whatever
I don't know,
it
it's
is.
A nine.
Right. I think for the time being, you could find me on TikTok at what Jay said, JAYE, what Jay said 2.0 at on TikTok. The Instagrams at author JB Harris, Twitter author JB Harris, also at what Jay said, no 2.0 on the Twitter, because I refuse to say X because Elon Musk is a fucking idiot. And also links to follow all my amazingness. You can follow the ideal firestarter.blog, all one word. The ideal firestarter.blog. Jennifer Harris Breathes Fire .blog. I think .blog also, but you can also put I Breathe Fire into the Google machine and I will pop up. All books are on Amazon and Kindle. The most current works that you can follow are, again, The Necromancy of Black Women, which is, published under Jennifer Bush Harris. Greg's other favorite book, Vengeance is the Body, also published as Jennifer Bush Harris, and also Poetry and Musings. The title of the book is Flying Home, Poetry and Musings by Jennifer Bush Harris. So I am everywhere and anywhere and all at the same time.
Well, I would like to say thank you for taking some time out of your day to talk to me. But that would imply that you had a choice in the matter.
I didn't.
I, for those of you listening, I just basically sent Jen the email and was like, okay, sign up now. Let's go.
I'm like, okay. And what? Okay, cool.
But thank you as always. It is always a joy to have you come and talk to me outside of the text messages for a little
more. Yeah, a little bit. It's fine. It's fine. We're gonna make it.
Stick around for more of the Mixtape Lounge right after this.
From the minds that brought you the smash hit podcasts, Your Life the Mixtape, and Headliners comes Your Life the Mixtape Magazine, a free monthly digital magazine that focuses on music, culture, and social commentary on current news and events. Visit www.yourlifethemixtape.com to subscribe today.
Hello there, I want to take a moment to talk to you about Dear Dean magazine from Dear Dean Publishing, my favorite subscription only monthly digital magazine. It's got subscriber-generated content about politics, pop culture, travel, family, pets, and poetry and wellness articles and features, contributor articles from nationally recognized journalists, writers, and artists, and provides opportunities for novice writers and authors and other contributors to share their voice, talents, and words. Did I mention that it's completely free? Dear Dean magazine provides free advert space for small creators, authors, and podcasters, fulfilling its vision that some art should always be free. It's owned and operated by Myron J. Clifton and is designed and distributed by Katya J. Lerner at Buzzword Consulting. Visit deardean.com/subscribe to get signed up.
Hey, Hey, Suge. I am the one and only Jennifer Bush Harris, known in other parts of the multiverse as What Jay Said. From the planet of TikTok comes What Jay Said, the podcast. Find me on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. I am a match struck, and fire is at work.
She is the queen of political thirst, the creator of the brother husband Twitter novella, and one of my favorite people in the entire world. Please welcome the absolutely incomparable, just iconic Cundi. Hello.
Hello. A pleasure to speak to you always.
It's always a joy to have you come by. And, you know, give us the spicy takes on the political hotties of the world.
Of course. I mean, that's what we always do, right?
So tell me, since the last time you were here, Thirst for Democracy was, you know, in its infancy. Where are we at now with that?
Wow. I'm trying to think. The last time we spoke, I don't think I had ventured out into the world. Thirst for Democracy existed almost entirely in my mind and on my Twitter feed, supporting candidates. And then, of course, as my alter ego, Stick Cundi, in her soap opera world with her five brother husbands. I think it was in July I made the good or bad, who knows, decision to actually take Thirst for Democracy, I guess, on the road. And I created a fundraising, what Chair Jamie Harrison calls a thirst raiser, called BayQuest. And I gave myself the challenge to meet bays, and I gave myself fundraising milestones. I said, if I meet one bay, I'm going to raise X amount. And I was lucky enough that people came along for the ride with me. And since I started that, I've met, I think it's four bays now. At first, I met Officer Teddy Bay, who is Harry Dunn, who's actually now running for Congress.
I love that.
Is poised to be Congressman Teddy Bay. And you know what? I am so glad I never gave that title away. It's like my body and my soul and my thirsty spirit knew I need to save the Congressman Bay title for one of the existing bays. Next, I met my favorites, Senator Ossoff, who I call Senator My Boo, and who now almost everyone is calling Senator My Boo, even to his face. And Senator Bay, Senator Warnock, and they were just the loveliest people. You know, they're very tall. They smell very nice. They gave great hugs, by the way.
Excellent.
And we spent most of the time talking about our kids. After that, I met soon-to-be Speaker Hakeem Jeffries, who I call Future Speaker Bay. And that was very exciting. It was very like Mission Impossible. I had to go through like several layers of staffers. I had to meet him at the designated location. We had like 5 minutes to take the photo. It was really, really fun. He's very nice. He is incredibly charming. He has a great laugh and beautiful.
How does he smell?
Smells great.
Of course.
He smells great. I did not get a hug from him, but the next time I see him, I am going to go in for the hug. I'm going to do it. yeah. And then since then, I've met Vice President Kamala Harris, and I swear to you, I had an out-of-body experience. it was like me watching myself freaking out in real time. I could barely speak. And so it was like me meeting Beyonce. That's, it was really intense. It was really intense. Fair. I was like almost like crying, just like seeing her. It's like she glided towards me. And she also smells great. Yeah. And has amazing hair. And is incredibly kind. Incredibly kind. We also spoke about my kids.
She does love the children.
She does love the children. She really does. She does.
VP is for the children.
She is. And the same day I met President Biden. He is very tall. He has Paul Newman blue eyes. I had no idea.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They're so blue. I was taken aback. He's very charming and he has a very calming presence.
I get that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's very nice. And he loves to chat. His Secret Service was like trying to get him out of there for like an hour. He was just chatting it up with everyone. And I met second gentleman, Doug Emhoff, who is really the nicest man on earth. Truly.
We love Doug.
He is amazing. He also gives great hugs.
I get that about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's amazing. I love Dougie. So yeah, it's come a long way since me drawing myself as a stick figure into pictures with all these people. I did a lot of fundraising for Senator Bay, Senator Warnock, and I kind of transitioned that Thirst for Democracy fundraising, not machine, but thing towards Biden-Harris. So far we've raised almost $70,000 for them.
Oh, wow. Congratulations on that.
Thank you, which is really exciting. And it's just been really fun to have everyone's participation, not just everyone on Twitter, but also the people that I've been calling Bays and the people that I've been tweeting about who are now also invested in like the whole Thirst for Democracy thing. So it's really just been a joy. An absolute joy.
So I know that you don't take Bay requests.
No.
You have made it abundantly clear to everyone on the World Wide Web that you are not a DJ. This is not request hour.
Indeed. Not just that, but I am now, because I'm now getting out there and going places to like parties and events and stuff. I'm actually getting them in person. And so, I have to gently decline.
So what we're going to do, though, is I do have a little game that I'd like to play with you.
All right.
I have chosen some political figures, and we're going to play a little game of, I've called it Hot or Not, but we can do Smash or Pass also.
Okay, let's do Hot or Not.
We'll do Hot or Not then. All right, so first up is the fourth president of the United States, James Madison.
Okay. Let me see. I don't know. I think it's maybe a not.
That's fair. That's
not. Yeah. I don't know. They're all too buttoned up. Who knows? Maybe they also wrote like fan fiction and were super interesting, but I don't know about that about them. So for now, it's a not. Because a lot about being a bae is personality, like decency, just general goodness, sense of humor, hugs, and smelling good. And just like a general sense of civic duty.
I like that. Next up, we have got Walter Clyburn Reed, who is the grandson of the legendary and iconic Jim Clyburn. Hot or not?
Isn't he adorable? You see, I feel like there's an age cutoff. Most of them are entering like their salt and pepper era, or are already in their zaddy era. Because I myself am an older lady.
A woman of a certain age.
I recently turned 40 and I'm about to have a teenager. He's turning 13 a few days. Yeah. So I tend not to beify or find the younger ones hot. So I'm sure in, 10, 20 years, come back to me and we can chat about it. But he is he's a good looking man.
Next, we have got the first ever Gen Z congressperson, Maxwell Frost from Florida.
Oh, so I went to a White House correspondence dinner after party and I was there with a friend of mine. She's Latina. And he actually walked past us and she stopped him and chatted to him. And he seems very nice. And he seems very nice. And friendly and kind. But for me, it's a lot. Not because he's not good looking, just, he's a bit young for me.
Not a problem. All right.
So next up, we have got the grandson of JFK, Jack Schlossberg, who, for the record, is 31.
I just looked it up.
So did I. So don't feel bad.
Okay. So I guess my first political thirst awakenings happened with JF Kennedy Jr.
Yes.
Because I'm like, I came up like in the 90s.
Yeah.
My God, right? Like, he was just crazy hot. Like,
I feel like he was everybody's like sexual awakening.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, geez. And young John looks a lot like him.
Yes. Looks a lot like him.
But what I like about him the most is his sense of humor. He's really funny. He's kind of kooky. He's kind of weird. And I like that. I like that about him. I love like his little skits that he does.
Yes, he has these characters he does.
And he just goes into character. I love that he doesn't explain what he's doing. He just does it, So if like people jump into it, like, what the hell is going on? He's like speaking with a Boston accent. And then he's like Russian. And then he's like, whatever. It's just hilarious. And he is very, very good looking. I don't know if I would say that, he's like my type, but I love him. I absolutely adore him. I think he's great.
He is fantastic. Is he hot or not, though?
He is hot. He is hot, but not Senator Maibu hot, if that makes sense.
That's fair.
Yes. I don't want to with the bays and like my guys that I'm really, really into, I want to snuggle up and watch like Star Trek with them.
Yeah. I like that.
Mm.
Next, we have a state delegate, now congressional candidate from Maryland, Mr. Joe Vogel.
Yes, I've seen a lot of young people that I know who are supporting him, and he seems like a good kid. And I wish him the best for his campaign. But he's not my type.
Not your type? Okay.
Stop making me say it, Greg.
You have to say it. That's the game.
Trying to be as nice as possible. I wish him the best.
I appreciate the diplomacy that you are employing here. And finally, and this is when I was putting together this list, I was like, I've got to have at least one tough one. So this was the tough one that I pulled. Rounding out our hot or not list is the ever hilarious senator from New Jersey, Mr. Cory Booker.
I adore Cory Booker for so many reasons. One, his dad jokes, which I think are hilarious. Two, like his wholehearted like defense of Black women when he's giving like Senate speeches or in hearings. His relationship with Vice President Kamala Harris is like so sweet, very sweet. And he's a giant nerd. I love like his unabashed love of Star Wars. I have had many petitions, very strong petitions to make him obey. Like I've had people lobby me like in person and DM. Like it's, there's a, if I doubt he'll ever listen to this, but if Cory Booker is listening, you have a very sizable fan base, a very sizable fan base. And do you know what? I would want to snuggle up and watch Star Trek with him, but it'll probably be as friends. But that's he fair. Is, yeah, he's very good looking, very nice, very kind, and I adore him.
Well, there we go. So just for my own curiosity, I'm wondering if there were lady bays, who would they be? Like top three?
Well, obviously Vice President Kamala Harris. That's like a no-brainer. I mean, whenever she goes to a state dinner or goes out on like a date night, she looks freaking stunning.
Yes.
Absolutely amazing. I'm not gonna lie, sometimes I look up items of her clothing and I'm like, could I buy this? And I immediately see the price and say, no, I can't. But
been there.
I love the look. Also, she satisfies all the Bay requirements. Lifelong public servant, incredibly kind, a decent person, dedicated to making other people's lives better, and incredibly hot. So yeah, definitely her. Who else would I choose? This is tough, actually. I haven't thought about this. Lauren Underwood. Okay, this is actually not that tough.
Excellent choice.
One, she's really pretty. I saw her once in passing, and I totally fangirled, and I tried saying hi to her, and the words barely came out, and she was like, okay, hi. Which thought I was like a crazy stalker or something, so I was freaking out so much. She's always like a vision in some like hot color, like pink. She's not afraid of color, and I love that about her. And all the other requirements, dedicated lifelong public servant. Before she was in Congress, she was like a nurse.
Yeah.
She is damn good at her job, right? She actually passes legislation, which is the job of a legislature.
Yes.
And she seems just really kind and nice. And she would probably like to sit on a couch and watch Star Trek, which funny enough has now become the barometer out of nowhere. Yes. So her, definitely. And probably Chantel Brown for the same reasons.
Also a good choice. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Also very good looking, great rapper, which maybe not that many people know. And she also just seems incredibly kind, decent, hardworking, lifelong public servant. So yeah, those are my top three.
I like that. I was your third spot. I was expecting either Chantel Brown or Jasmine Crockett.
Mm.
I was like, it'll go one of those two ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I like that. That's a good list.
Mm.
So we have talked about the Bays and, you know, the multiverse where there would be possibly Lady Bays. What's going on with Stick Condi and the Brother Husbands?
Yeah, man. So I I can't remember when our last chat was. I think I was in South Africa. I think I'd already written the 10th season, the last season.
Yes.
Of Stick Bundy. And I think we were kind of discussing, like, where next? Where does she go next? And I have to admit that I have neglected her and her brother husbands.
Oh, no.
For quite some time, yeah. Because as soon as I started ramping up on supporting Brighton Harris, like, I just had, like, zero time. And then Harry Dunn then also started his campaign. So I was spending a lot of time on that. So then I started BayQuest, and then suddenly I wasn't just sitting at home, right, and drawing stick figures into pictures. I was now going to campaign events and stuff and trying to track down Bays who would agree to take pictures of me after I wrote an entire soap opera drawing myself into pictures with hot men. So yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while. And I've been trying to think how to bring her back and write more stories for her. Because you know what? I miss her. I miss her a lot. And a lot of people miss her too. Like, they keep asking me, what's going on? When is she coming back? So I've been kind of dipping my toe into the water. And I've been doing like a series of like tiny little feuds between her and me, because I have the Bays and she has the brother husbands who are primarily actors, and the Bays are primarily politicians. So sometimes we butt heads. It sounds really weird because I'm basically fighting with myself online using two different Twitter accounts. But within the Bay Thirstverse, it makes perfect sense. Because we're two completely different people with different lives, and sometimes our thirsts cross streams and it gets ugly. Like, she might start saying EPA Bay is hot, or I might start saying that Idris Elba is hot, and then, you know, we have a little tiff. So that's kind of how I've been, like, starting to bring her back, because I think the next phase of that her story is going to be some kind of crossover. So this is kind of the baby steps to make that happen.
I love that. So would we ever get, like, Stick Kondi merch, perhaps?
Maybe. I think if I kind of revive it, I think that would be really fun.
That would be fun. I would love a Stick Kondi t-shirt.
Yeah. I've been also toying with the idea of doing some Bay merch.
Oh, that would be good.
Just trying to figure out, like, the back end, because I want to donate most of the money to charity. I mean, to Biden Harris, but then figuring out how to do that. Once I figure that out, then I'm gonna start putting it out. Yeah. And the next phase, obviously, as well, with Stick Kondi and her universe, is start meeting the brother husbands. But that's for after the campaign, because I'm busy with the campaign for now. But after that, Idris Elba, Jason.
you are on Idris's radar. You are getting sent some swag, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct. So I think we hadn't discussed this the last time, or maybe we had. Idris had responded to one of my tweets, one of my thirst tweets, because his wife, Sabrina, had, I think she started following me on Twitter. So long story short, I started communicating with Sabrina and with Sable Labs, which is their skincare company. And they put me in one of their campaigns on Instagram, which is insane and amazing and incredible. And since then, I've just been collaborating with their skincare line. And I use it. I love it. As I said, I'm a lady of a certain age, and it's just, it's helped my skin basically just glow. So when I go to events and stuff, I don't have to wear makeup. I don't, first of all, I don't like wearing makeup, but yeah, I don't need it. Not to brag, but it's thanks to Idris and Sabrina. yeah, so I'm hoping that one day I will actually get to meet them. That one is not such a crazy thought. It might actually happen.
Yeah. So you have mentioned that you are supporting the re-election of Biden Harris.
Absolutely.
And you are behind Officer Future Congressman Teddy Bay's campaign. Who else, what other candidates are you looking at right now?
Well, I've been trying to keep it pretty focused on those two candidates, because in the 22 cycle, I felt like I stretched myself a little bit too thin, and like my personal life like took a dip, right? And at the end of that cycle, I was like finished. So this cycle, I decided just to focus on those two races. That said, people should really be focusing on Senate races, because there are a lot of incumbents who are up for re-election. I'm thinking of Sherrod Brown, Tester, I guess Rosen. There are a bunch of people who are up for re-election that need to win. And then on top of that, there's some open seats. So in Maryland, I would advise people to vote for Angela Alsobrooks. Brooks. She has the support of a lot of Congress people and senators from Maryland, as well as a whole range of senators from other states who are supporting her. So we need to keep that seat, because they've recruited Larry Hogan, who is the former Republican governor of Maryland. He's not a good guy. He's one of those people who pretends to be a moderate, kind of like Brian Kemp.
Oh, yeah.
And Glenn Youngkin, right? They're wolves in sheep's clothing. So they're like, oh, I'm a good Republican. No, you're not, because they're going to vote for all the things that we do not want them to vote for. Abortion bans. They're going to vote against voting rights. They are not for us. They do not believe the things that we believe, no matter how they talk out the sides of their mouths when they're campaigning. So for all the seats where you think there's a quote unquote reasonable Republican running, they're not reasonable. Vote for a Democrat. Those are the main ones that I'll tell people to look out for. And just in general, please just vote for Democrats. Like, don't take a chance on a Republican, for God's sakes. A Democrat is a solid vote for the things that you value and the things that you believe in, and for our fundamental freedoms.
So we hear, you know, every election cycle, there are the people that, you know, kind of bemoan the idea when it is said that, you know, this election cycle is the most consequential of our lives. And yes. we definitely saw that 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that what some people have lost sight of is that civic engagement is your lifelong duty, right? It's not one election and everything is fixed, or I just have to vote in this one election and then I'm done. It's literally, you need to vote in every single election for the rest of your life to protect democracy. Because protecting democracy isn't just about offense, it's about defense. Because the rights that you have right now are not set in stone. The rights that you have right now are ones that are quite recent, think decades old, in some cases less than decades old, that Republicans who are still in power remember when people got those rights and they still resent it. And they've been working ever since those laws came to pass, civil rights laws, LGBTQ laws, laws giving women rights to have a credit card in their name. I mean, these are such basic things that they want to take away from us, that every election literally is the most important election. Because you, mind my language, if you fuck up in one election, it has consequences for future elections, because now we have to clean up the mess, right? So when you say, oh no, Roe is gone, it's Biden's fault. No, Roe is gone because in 2016, Hillary lost. So now we're still cleaning up that mess from 2016 in future elections. So you skip an election, you think one election doesn't matter, and it reverberates through time, basically, right?
Right.
So instead of focusing on other issues, we're now focused on abortion because Trump had three Supreme Court justice picks and they killed Roe. We could be focused on other things, right? We could be focused on voting rights or advancing our fundamental freedoms even further, right? We could be completely focused on climate change. Not to say that we're not doing all those things at the same time, but now we're fighting on a right that we thought that we had because people thought one election didn't matter. That's why we say every single election is the most consequential election, because you sleep on one election and you're fucked.
That is, yeah. That is very much it. And, you know, to that point also, you know, we had 2016 gone a different way, and, mm-hmm. you know, we won't sit here and relitigate 2016 because, you know, we all know what happened.
Yeah.
Had it gone a different way, you know, instead of, you know, the administration having to fight things like the Affordable Care Act,
mm-hmm, exactly.
being repealed in the courts, mm-hmm. or, you know, student debt relief,
mm-hmm.
you know, we could be at a point where, you know, those things we would have a public option by now. You know, student debt relief, it would all be gone. It'd be a wash at this point. You know, so to your point, yes, every election matters, even the local elections. Like, let's not Absolutely. Just federal.
As your state elections, who your governor is, because your governor can just be like, oh, I don't want that federal funding for healthcare, right? So Joe Biden can make sure, and Congress can make the funds available, but your governor can refuse to take them.
That is true. Yes.
So to your point, every single layer of government absolutely matters. And every single election matters. So when people are complaining, oh, the cops are in the streets at the protests, well, Joe Biden didn't send them, your mayor did.
Right.
Right? And if there's state troopers there, your governor sent them. Go
exactly.
Talk to them. And if you didn't vote, why didn't you vote? And I absolutely understand that in some states and localities, right? Even if you're a Democrat and you vote, there's voter suppression, or they just aren't enough Democrats to get better representation. I get that. But in the places where your vote really does, like, have power, don't sit there.
Very much
higher voter turnout. Much higher voter turnout.
No,
because there are more of us than there are of them.
Yes.
Mathematically speaking.
Now, I'm curious because of
something you said in there about, you know, police being at these protests, and there are those Twitter activists who are blaming the president and his administration for that. Why do you think something that is a local government, something that, like you said, the mayor did, for instance, why do you think people are so quick to place the blame on the president?
I think there are a couple of things going on. I think one, there is definitely a lack of civic engagement. And I don't know if it's an education issue at the school level or just people don't care to know, don't want to know, or it's not on their radar to understand the roles and responsibilities at different levels of government. But that's why I come back to that point that I came back to, that I made earlier about civic engagement being a lifelong duty. It's not just that we have rights as citizens, we also have responsibilities as citizens. And one of those responsibilities is to be informed so that we can be active citizens. And when we act as citizens, we act responsibly and we understand what goals we have and which levers to pull and who can be moved within the system to achieve our goals. So understanding that the person who sent the police is not the president helps those people be more effective in whatever they're doing, because then they can not vote for that mayor the next time if that's their top issue, right? Not voting for the president doesn't change who the mayor is. It also helps them become more effective in whatever cause they're fighting for, if you understand the system better. If your aim is just fuck the system, I want to blow everything up, right? Then sure, that's if that feels good to you, that's great, but it's not effective. I think also there's some bad actors, people who use whatever is going on in the world. It can be the train derailment in East Palestine. It can be the conflict in Haiti. It can be the conflict in the Middle East. Really anything. It can be student loan debt. It can be Medicare for all. It can be whatever cause. And then place it at the feet of the president or at the feet of Democrats, because their aim is to damage the Democratic Party. So those are, I think, the two kind of camps of people who blame everything on the president. One, people who don't understand who to blame when something happens. And two, people who know who to blame, but blame certain people because their aim is to denigrate them.
So this would not be a mixtape show if I didn't at least ask you a few music type questions.
The answer is Beyonce.
That's fair. That's completely fair.
I think the last time we spoke out was actually like, it was when Renaissance came out.
That's right.
Yeah. And of course, that was my entire life at the time. So continue your question.
I guess it,
but you know the answer.
This has become a tradition for us now that, you know, we're gonna have to schedule your interviews around Beyonce release date.
I think so. I can't wait until Act 3.
So if you were running for public office, what would your campaign song be?
Ooh. You know, I really love American Requiem.
I love that.
I am obsessed with that song. and actually tweeted out, "Vice President Kamala Harris, please make this your walkout song."
Yes.
Of course, she has like other Beyonce songs that she does. You know, she does Break My Soul and Freedom on her recent Economic Opportunity Tour, which people should check out. Her first stop was Atlanta, and yesterday she was in Detroit. And basically, it's a tour where she is touting the achievements of the Biden-Harris administration in making economic opportunity available to more people, whether it's being an entrepreneur, whether it's record low employment as a result of like their policies and getting investments in building factories, et cetera. And basically just telling people where to go to get the resources from the government to get ahead. Her walkout song for that was Freedom by Beyonce.
All right, yeah.
But if I was a candidate, it would be American Record.
What is your favorite song right this very minute?
You know what? There's so many. I just quickly go here, because this will tell me what I've been listening to. But, I mean, if I'm honest, it's really just been Beyonce. But I don't want to sound crazy.
No, that's completely fair.
So my favorite song on the album is Alligator Tears.
Oh my God, me too.
Really?
Yes.
It's brilliant. And I cannot stop listening to it. And every time I listen to it, I hear something new.
Yes.
For
me, it's Alligator Tears and then Desert Eagle, because that bass line is nasty.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The whole album, just really, honestly, is brilliant.
Yes.
I think we spoke about this the last time. You know, we spoke about Jessie Ware.
Yeah.
Who I love. And I recently heard a song by her called Alone. But it's not a new song. It's not that new. But yeah, I can't stop listening to that. I love that song.
What is the best breakup song?
Tears Dry on Their Own, Amy Winehouse.
Ooh, excellent answer.
Actually, the entire album.
Yes.
Probably. That was like my breakup album. I haven't broken up with anyone in a while, but yeah. yeah, that was my go-to.
What would you say is the ultimate party anthem?
I mean, what always gets me up and dancing is Donna Summer.
Yes. Any song in particular, or just like the whole shebang?
The whole shebang. Yeah, the whole shebang. I mean, I really love Dim All the Lights. I don't know if that's such a party song, but it does get me dancing.
There, yes.
You know, it starts out kind of slow, but like, you know when you're at a club, and you hear that song and then you're just like swaying to the music and you're just like feeling it and it's coursing through your whole body. That's kind of like what Dim All the Lights is. And then it kind of gets there, right? Yeah. And then, yeah, you're just like grooving and feeling it. Yeah. So, yeah.
And our final music related question, and we've had to put a modifier on this. You cannot mention anything done by Whitney Houston.
Okay. As everyone just say Whitney Houston.
Yes. That being said, what is the best song from a film soundtrack?
Oh. Huh. Can't say Whitney Houston. Well, then it has to be, and we talked about this last time, Kissing You, Desiree.
Yes.
From that, is correct
that is the correct answer.
Just the whole scene, and God, she looked gorgeous in that scene. That would be it.
I love it.
One more modifier, because this happened after we spoke last time. Steven Universe, the movie, which I love. It was a show on Cartoon Network, and they did a movie. And there's a song by Estelle. True Kind of Love. And I adore that song. And I've actually had on a couple of my videos. So when I was doing Bay Quest and I was trying to get people guessing who I was going to meet, I used that song. This is the truth, it's the truth, it's the truth kind of love. So it's just like whimsical and like romantic and sweet, kind of like the bass.
I love that.
I'm sitting here, you know, when you sit there with like your chin and like your hands and like you're like,
yeah,
oh, sweet. I literally did that thinking about it in the bass.
So tell the folks listening at home and all over the world where they can track you down on the World Wide Web if they would like to get involved.
Oh, great. I'm primarily active on Twitter, although I'm trying my best also to be on other platforms. But on Twitter, it is at Gondintini. So Q-O-N-D-I. N-T-I-N-I. That's on Twitter, where I am most of the time cutting it up, talking about hot men and democracy. You can also find me on Instagram, which is the same handle, at Gondintini. I'm also on Threads, same handle. I'm also on Spoutable at Q-O-N-D-I, at Gondi. And I'm on TikTok, and it's really bizarre that my channel there is actually pretty popular because I'm not there much, but it's mostly on account of all the shirtless Jason Momoa videos that I post. So on TikTok, it is at Stick Gondi, STICKQONDI. And, if you would like to donate to Biden Harris, you can also go to, I'm on Act Blue, and on the Act Blue thing, you can just do Thirst Fund. So THIRSTFUND, Thirst Fund. Yeah.
Excellent.
So find me. We can thirst for democracy together. Make sure Biden Harris win. Make sure Democrats win at every level of government. Because do you know what? We just want the world to be fun again, right?
That's right.
I hear people when they say that they're tired, they're exhausted. Politics is depressing. Part of what I do is to try and make politics fun. And if we consistently and with joy make sure that Democrats are always winning, guess what? Life will be fun again, right? We can just like cut it up on Twitter and like laugh at cat videos and, you know, just rate hot men like I used to before I got into politics and do all the stuff that we love doing, knowing that government is working for us. So if we just keep making sure that government is working for us by electing Democrats, we can get on with our lives and have a good time.
Amen. Well, thank you for taking a little bit of time out of your morning to talk to me about all the things. As always, I have enjoyed this so much.
Oh, I had a great time. And one more thing. At that party I went to, I met Aldous Hodge. My God.
Man,
I don't know. He's like, I don't know what God or whoever, the goddess or the universe did to build him as a package. He is incredibly tall. Very, very tall. Very, very hot. Oh my goodness. Yes. And very nice. This is the running theme. I like nice people. I like nice men. Okay. Kind, nice, decent men with a sense of humor.
As it should be.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot to mention that I did meet Campaign Bay. Otherwise,
that's right. Yeah.
I'm going to be on my neck being like, so you mentioned everyone else and didn't mention me. So Campaign Bay is principal deputy campaign manager for the Biden-Harris campaign. He was the campaign manager for Senator Warnock. And he is crazy hot. He is really, really hot. I hope none of the other Bays are listening and just he's listening. But he was the hottest in person of all the Bays.
I love it.
Yeah. Very intense. Deep voice. Holds eye contact.
Oh, wow.
Love it. Yeah. Yeah. Dresses really, really well. Like little details in the way that he dresses, just like put together and hilarious and sweet and kind. The end.
The Mixtape Lounge is a Your Life. The Mixtape Media LLC production in association with Rod Wharton Productions. All rights and trademarks reserved.